Recovering Queen. The Queen Fan Podcast, where we talk about and play the songs we love. With Jay, Matt, and Ian.
Welcome to the Recovering Queen Podcast, where we take a Queen song, recover a Queen song, we then have a little chat about a Queen song, and then decide what we thought about a track by the greatest band in the whole world, Queen.
Smooth.
Smooth, eh? And I'm Matt, and as always, the co-hosts are Jay and Ian. Good evening, gents.
Good evening.
Oh, sorry. I went too quickly.
Is what she said last night. Ian, what song are we talking about tonight?
We are talking about Brian May's miserable classic, Leaving Home Ain't Easy.
Never has a phrase been more prescient.
Yeah, God, leaving home ain't easy during a lockdown, that's for certain.
Well, good work. If it's,
that's the full title, isn't it?
Brackets in a lockdown.
Well, yeah, currently against the law to leave your home unless it's for essential travel or food purposes, isn't it? Or one exercise
Brian
a day.
Knows.
How could Brian have possibly have known?
Well, he is a scientist, so he knew that the risk of pandemic was always there, Ian. Always there.
Yeah. Now, I'm not sure that Brian was referring to pandemics and lockdowns when he wrote Leaving Home Ain't Easy. I think this is more part of his general theme that we've been discovering through his lyrics, through the songs through the year, of a general sense of loneliness when not being at home, kind of wanting to be at home and kind of not wanting to be at home as well.
Yeah. Starting with 39, I think. 39's got that kind of leaving and coming back and everything changed.
Yeah.
Definitely part of that. But there's an extra reason why I think this one rings really true is before he's written this and before he's gone to the studio, he's had his first kid, little Jimmy May, on June the 15th, 1978. So I think, you know, obviously that means he's now got a little young family as well. That he's leaving home.
Anita may be the only way.
Anita may be the only way. Yeah, he definitely does weird things with the lyrics in this one in terms of trying to fit them in. That necessarily is a weird word where he tries to sort of stretch it over the entire chorus.
Yeah, I actually read it as being quite clever with the lyrics in the way that he does that. I agree. But for me, it's just so sad. He sounds so sad in it. I mean, I think he's done a good job because he's got that sort of, his voice lends itself to a little bit of melancholy anyway. But in this, I can't bear it. I was just like, oh no, Brian. I mean, it is difficult, but it really gets to me sometimes.
Before getting too down, I think this is one of Brian May's best songs, and I think it's definitely one of the best, if not the best, non-single on jazz. If anything, it rescues side two of jazz, really brings it up a notch in terms of the whole feel of the album.
Yeah, I'm saying it's a good thing. I'm saying he really embodies the song. You know, it's like a great performance.
It's just that ever since we announced it, we said the depressing classic. And I just thought, it sounded like we had a downer on it. But to be honest,
And
it's one of Brian May's best performances. Probably the one where he sounds most like Paul McCartney as well. Just like She Makes Me, it's got that really Beatles-y vibe to it.
Yeah, I would agree. I think this is up there with Brian's. If not the best song he ever wrote, and certainly, his best performance vocally, definitely.
I mean, one of the problems I have is on the lyric. He sings something like I slammed the door. Well, I mean, I can't imagine Brian slamming a door. I think he's going a bit over the top there.
Yeah.
So I wonder who he's seen maybe slam a door and incorporated that into it. I don't know. Can you imagine him slamming a door?
I find it hard to believe that he has, just in case a badger is trying to get through it at the time. He might hurt something, might hurt an animal while he's going through that door.
Brian May would have already made his point before leaving, so he would have, he would have made a perfectly reasoned explanation to the person he's speaking to. and then politely said goodbye and then and gone and, you know, closed the door politely behind him. He'd have no reason to resort to violence.
He may have even then opened the door back again just to say, I hope I didn't shut that too loudly. Yeah.
Whereas
not overstepping the mark.
Whereas if it had been Roger, he would probably like kick the door down.
Shot it.
And then, you know, driven his car very fast past it, you know, spraying gravel up at the windows or something.
Whereas Freddie would have got one of his personal assistants to slam it for him.
Yeah. Yeah, do.
Slam the door for me, darling. Yeah.
And it's a really beautiful melody as well, isn't it? That's the other thing about it. It's really sweet melody, I think.
Yeah, I think the way it's constructed, the verse into the chorus, I think is absolute perfection. It's a beautiful verse. Yeah. Really picks up. It's got a nice meter to it as well. The long notes of the leave-in home ain't easy are just wonderful.
It's a very, very solo track as well, isn't it? I don't think Fred is on this at all, not even in the backing vocal sense.
No, he isn't. Although it does sound a little bit like him, doesn't it, in the middle eight?
The middle eight, apparently, they've slowed the tape down and then Brian sang it and then sped it up and then they've stuck some reverb.
What I don't understand is why was he singing that bit? Because he's singing from a different... point of view again, isn't he?
That's why he's slowed the tape down so it sounds like his wife saying don't leave.
Yeah, but why didn't he just get her to do it?
Well, I guess she doesn't come to the studio or can't sing. when you say her, do you mean like in the sort of Elton calling Freddie her type sense?
No. But it's high, isn't it? It would be easily within Roger's range to sing that middle eight bit.
Yeah, but then that's like Roger singing to Brian, isn't it? Don't go. And Brian go, well, I am. That'd be weird.
Yeah, that would be a bit weird. And does Roger ever sing on a Brian May song?
Tumbleweed.
Yeah,
maybe
that's
the listeners
one.
Know. Listeners, do let us know if Roger Taylor has ever taken a lead vocal part in a Brian May song.
Ooh, Doing All Right.
Hang on, but that's, yeah, but isn't that that's Tim Staffel's song? Isn't
it?
Yeah.
It's Staffel May, isn't it? Staffel May song. Yeah. And Roger does a little bit in the middle, doesn't he? That's the only one I can think of off the top of my head.
Thank you, listener.
They were all screaming it. They were all screaming it at their radio set.
And all the others.
Is this the first of the Brian May cookie cutter ballads? Is there one before it, or is this the first of the Sail Away Sweet Sisters and all those kind of things?
Teo Toriate from Day at the Races.
Oh yeah,
that's where he started the big anthem. It's not quite the
it's
same
it's not an
is
anthem-y
it?
Ballad no, no I'm talking is... I think maybe 39 actually is a folky ballad, isn't it? This is a folky ballad.
No, this is in the Venn diagram with that includes Someday One Day.
Oh, yeah, and Long Away. Long Away, Someday One Day.
Someday One Day, yeah. It's Brian May.
Yeah, definitely Someday
it's
One
his,
Day.
It's his slightly
that.
Less bombastic quality songwriting, isn't it? Rather than the Teo Toriate, Las Parables de Amor, We Will Rock You style. Hmm. Kind of, you know, the big stadium rockers.
The only thing I suppose that's a little bit galling is the rock star that's highly successful with his about fifth or sixth song whinging about having to be away from home all the time on tour. It's like, well, okay.
But we don't know. It's more about the relationship, isn't it, than the tour?
No, because the relationship's going well at this point. They've just had a kid. They're yet to have a few more kids. This is about how hard it is to leave home because you're saying bye-bye to your loved ones.
And I suppose back in the day, because these days they'd probably just all go all together, wouldn't they? So maybe back in the day, I think that from all the music biographies I've read over the years, that the wives and children very rarely went on tour with the band.
Yeah, the weird thing that I read is that Brian actually hated the studio more than touring. That sort of going to the studio and being away from his family. Because remember, the studio for this one was Switzerland and France. So Montreux and the other one, the Super Bear in Bear Les Alpes or somewhere like that. And so he's away from home and he hates being in the studio, apparently, because that's where the band all argue about stuff. Okay. Whereas when they're on the road, it's like everything's settled. They know how the songs are performed and they all have fun on the road.
I imagine on tour as well, most of your waking hour is taken up with either traveling, sound checking, performing or interviewing or partying, I guess. Whereas recording, it be in the studio all day, then to a hotel or something, you know, on your own, and then back in the studio the next day.
Having to cope with Roger, John and Freddie disagreeing with you all the time.
Yeah, trying to get you off your track, trying to get you off their tracks.
Yeah, I mean, there's only so many times you can pretend to be ill, isn't there, to make sure that you come in later when everyone has gone.
Yeah, because he was...
To avoid the arguments.
He joined the sessions late on this one as well. He joined the sessions late because of his kid. So he does turn up to the studio late on lots of occasions for when the studio sessions start. So I guess John Deacon does a heck of a lot of work like for Brian in absence, but when they're sort of getting backing tracks together and stuff.
Yeah, I must admit, I didn't realise it. I thought it was him splitting up in a relationship. I didn't realise he was just going to
That's
record.
That's not for a few years, I think, is it, when he split up? I think that was a few
years
time.
Agree with you, Jay. That's what I always used to think because of the slam the door bit. It felt like it's like, yeah, okay, leaving home is leaving home, divorce style leaving home.
Well, yeah, and also I'm a happy man, don't it seem that way? I mean, that's sort of...
Yeah.
Maybe it is the start of Brian writing from another character's point of view. You know, as we went on in Sail Away, Sweet Sister, it's not about Brian, it's about a character that would behave in that way.
It's possible.
Possible. This one just seems so, this one just seems so personal, anecdotal. It just seems, that is harder to swallow.
Is it John Deacon on bass?
Yeah. John, the bass line is absolutely beautiful and absolutely quite hard to play. And the best thing about, in fact, this is one of the only tracks that we've done where we've got a guest on it, because my friend who'd been stuck on a cruise, he's a cruise ship bass player, performs every night on cruise ships with high profile artists and things, and like an amazing bass player. And he'd been stuck on a cruise ship for absolutely ages, and he didn't have anywhere to stop, so we were stopping at my house and I said, can you put the bass line down on this track? And I gave him the sheet music and he played it straight off, but it was such a joy watching him play John Deacon's bass part, because the bass part kind of reminds me of These Are the Days of Our Lives. It's got that kind of sliding up to notes and things like that, and it's really, really nice. And coming out of the bridge, the high vocal bridge, you've got that run where it goes, and it's like, whoa, it's like, it's brilliant. No, the bass playing's really good, and it's definitely John.
And do you think with something like that, Brian would have said to John, this is the song, do what you can?
Yeah, it just feels very much like a bass player's bass part.
Mm.
Guitarists play bass in a certain way, but it's so John Deacon. It's so John Deacon, and it's John Deacon really at his prime as well. I think the bass playing on that is really good.
And musically, it does shift a gear in that middle eight. It goes all very ethereal, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Musically, does it, what does it do? Is it bonkers chords?
No, it does the classic Brian May trick, which he essentially writes the whole of Flash Gordon soundtrack to, of having a bass pedal and then fairly sort of standard chord changes over the top, but you've got like a bass pedal that's keeping it in one key while the chords are trying to pull it out into another key.
So
you've got that kind of exotic sounding, you know, harmonic structure without really too much going on other than a pedal bass.
Yeah.
And you know, that's like, that is essentially the whole of Flash Gordon, the album, but he does it quite a lot. That is Brian May's little kind of, he loves that trick.
When you say a pedal bass, do you just mean there's like a root note going through most
there's
of
just,
it?
And it just sticks to one note and it keeps doing. I mean, Bach is the person that invented it, but but it's the, you just stuck on that one bass and then the harmony changes it around, but you're continually being, it's almost like you've got two key centers, one pulling you away from the other one.
So almost, in fact, he's used it before then and afterwards. So, because the end of, sounds a bit like, correct me if I'm wrong, but sounds like the end of She Makes Me.
Yeah, well, it does it. Yeah, exactly. She Makes Me is exactly the same. You've got a drone and then you've got this, and then you've got this changing chord pattern. He does it at the beginning, middle and end of this track of Leaving Home, because he does it on the, instead of on the bass, it's on the sort of muted guitar, the guitar.
Okay.
And then he has the harmony guitars doing the chordal movement over the top.
Yeah.
So he does it in the intro. Then he does it in the middle section with the bass going doo 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 doo. It's got the bass is actually playing this really high note that's quite cool. And then he does the same thing again on the outro, yeah.
Right. And there's that strange bit in the middle of Thank God It's Christmas as well, where the note goes to, I think it's B on the bass and the chords are doing the Ds and the Gs, I think, on top, if memory serves.
He does it loads. He does it loads. It's his sort of go-to technique, as are the chords in this as well. The DDA thing that he does. Jing, jing.
Oh, is that the Brian May?
That all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just like, what was annoying is I transposed it, which made what is really nice to play on the guitar really awkward.
Uh-oh.
And so my version doesn't quite hit that jing jing as well as I would like.
But you're about the same range though as Brian. What did you bring it down?
Yeah, I had to bring it down quite a bit just so it would, because if my vocal on Brian May songs, as my kids are moaning at me, it always sounds like I'm straining, and I am straining. He's definitely higher pitch, you know, he's definitely got a higher voice than me.
On this one, you don't want to sound like you're straining. Has to be relaxed.
Just high enough so I've got the energy, and it, you know, it felt like I was singing like Brian in the right same range as Brian, except I had to bring it down. bring it down to be there.
The atmosphere of this song really puts me in mind of, if you remember the Gatefold album of jazz, where you open it up and there's that huge picture of them in the studio, and I think, is it Freddie's lying down on the piano, Roger's leaning up against the gong at the back. It's a black and white photo. It must be of wherever they're recording at the time. And it always really sucked the energy out of me. It looked like really stuffy in there, and they were all a bit bored and tired.
Yeah. I always used to think that was New York, but I don't know why, because it's either Montreux or this Super Bear studio, I'm assuming.
I mean, it could have been a production studio for rehearsals, because it is pretty huge, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it always reminded me, and that kind of lethargy of I guess the slightly, the slightly down feel on it always really put me in mind of that internal black and white photo of them in the studio, where they're not playing, they're just kind of in between sessions. Probably, who was a photographer at the time, he's walked in and, you know, taken a snap of them mid-break or something.
This song actually has quite a visual element to it as well. You can imagine Brian leaving his house, dusting his shoes down, sighing, slamming the door a bit. You know, it would be very easy to do a cheesy music video.
Oh yeah.
Not that you would.
Oh, it's an idea.
I'm not pitching it.
And of course, naturally, never played live, as you kind of probably, no surprise there, really. If you think of the songs they're doing from jazz at the time, wouldn't possibly have the energy required in the set list at that time either.
But I think you could have released this as a single. One of the strongest songs that doesn't seem to have even been up for single discussion.
I don't know. It's very hard, isn't it? I mean, you've got Bicycle Race on there. What are you going to do?
bicycle race conundrum every time. What should we release as a single? Well, Bicycle Race, of course. That's not going to be a hit. What even is it?
Yeah, what is what it again?
It even slags off Star Wars, the biggest film around at the time, which with a weird hint back to Stormtroopers.
And then has a bicycle bell solo in the middle.
Yeah, yeah, it's got hit written all over it.
Yeah.
Do we know who plays that? I know we're going off very slightly, but do we know who played the bells in that?
Well, cool. Officially a percussion instrument, so...
probably, you know, they must have got Roger to do it. MU rules.
In Roger's, yeah, Roger's camp. Absolutely. I imagine they all probably had them, didn't they?
I'm not doing it. You are doing it. Just do it.
I tell you what was annoying about leaving home and drumming. I'd finished the track and I sent it over to my mate Tim. My mate Tim is a songwriter and he wrote the song Pure and Simple by Hearsay. And I sent it over to him. He instantly came back and said, well, you haven't done the flams on Roger's drums. And I went, what? And so I'd listened again. And in the choruses, Roger does a flam on every other beat.
Does he really?
So instead of it just being a single snare hit, he goes, ka, kla. You know, we've got that sort of double hit. So I had to go and redo the snare.
Of course.
It's like, oh my God, yeah. But it really works. It really works to drive the song along. It's so good. It's so good.
Well, every alternate one was that he's doing a flam is like a double hit.
So yeah, you're hitting the snare with both sticks with one stick slightly delayed. So you get that nice flam sound. Yeah. So, and it was... And it's on the fourth beat, so you got your normal two, one, two, three, flam, and so yeah, it's really good. It really works.
I mean, it does require a bit of a great deal of subtlety. This song, doesn't it? It's not. He's not going to be doing the huge great fill-ins that adorn the rest of the tracks on the album. So he's just putting a little bit extra in there, isn't he?
Mm. And I think it's an interesting point. It's one of the things that I picked up on some of the percussion. Where you think, how am I going to drive this track? And sometimes you think, well, yeah, of course, you just get it like, and that's going to drive it. And it really just doesn't work like that. And that's one of the things that, you know, deconstructing some of the Queen songs has taught me, that it just needs to be whatever it is. It just needs to be the right thing. And it could be even something quite simple, like you say, like a flam, as you call it, every fourth beat. And that's enough to drive it through. You don't have to do like a big fill in or anything. It's just getting the right thing at the right time, isn't it?
Roger's power as the drummer, wasn't it? You know, a real drummer for the song. He'd never get held up as one of the most technical drummers alongside, you know, at the time, contemporaries, Phil Collins, Neil Peart, you know, all that lot. He's not that type of drummer, but he contributes equally as they do to the song.
Yeah, no, totally.
He's just fantastic as playing for the song. He's got all those tricks in his bag where he can play slightly behind the beat or slightly in front of the beat as well. And they're the really subtle things, aren't they? Where it's like you're building tension or you're pulling back tension and stuff like that. And he's great at that. You know, take that bit in the game where he just leads it out of that final chorus, and it's just glorious. What a drummer.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Mm. And little thing, you know, we take it for granted, his rototoms, you know, to make those fill-ins a bit more interesting. You know, he kind of invented that. And again, as you just mentioned, the flams on the, you know, just a real subtle thing to drive it along, to just add a bit of colour to make the song slightly better, even if you don't consciously notice it.
Yeah, and do you know what? The other day I was fiddling around and thinking, I wonder what would happen if I didn't have the open hi-hat on the snare. Mm-hmm. And it really changes the feel and sound of a song.
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't work. I was doing it on You and I. I was thinking, I wonder what happens if you don't have the hi-hat opening on the snare. It's like, yeah, it sounds shit. It's like, it genuinely needs it. So, and he's the only drummer I can think of who does it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's utterly unique. I was watching some footage of a recent Queen performance, or Queen Now performance, so just Roger and Brian. Adam Lambert wasn't in it because Roger was out from behind the kit, and I think it was an extract from A Kind of Magic, because the guitars were going kind of crazy, where they must have a second drummer on tour with them, and there's another guy playing.
Yeah, but it's his son. It's Rufus.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Ah, okay, that makes sense.
And when he's not playing with the darkness,
wasn't doing the hi-hat thing, and it just didn't sound like Queen. You know, it just sounded like a Queen covers band and somebody that hadn't quite paid enough attention, almost. Which, if it is Rufus, that's a bit bizarre.
Yeah. Well, I can imagine he hasn't. He's a bit. He's like Roger. He's a bit of a boy. Yeah. He's a bit of a boy racer. You know, he's
Leaving Home Ain't Easy, a real high point on the Queen album Jazz. Brian May's arguably his best performance. And again, the songwriting quality is up there with the very best work that he ever produced and, to be honest, that Queen ever produced.
It's the vocal performance on this song that we've said time and time again. It's the type of vocal performance which you really miss on a Queen album, just to offset the continual histrionics of Freddie Mercury. It's so good to have that. Can we just have a little break now and bring it down and have... You know, there's no way that Freddie could get the kind of pathos and sort of sadness that Brian's achieving on this track.
No.
And it's really good. It's just, it's just perfect, isn't it? I mean, it really is.
It is.
All of the Brian things coming together and working absolutely spot on. Mm. I mean, it's got, what's weird about it actually is that there's so many elements of Queen in it. Harmony guitars, harmony vocals, all those sort of things, but it still seems like a really kind of normal folky ballad, even though it's got all those elements in it.
And it still sounds like Queen, despite no piano, no Freddie.
A solid bit of songwriting.
Yeah.
What's the track after Leaving Home Ain't Easy?
Don't Stop Me Now.
Don't Stop Me Now.
Oh, yes, of course, of course.
Don't Stop Me Now. No wonder Leaving Home isn't in the call for singles.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
But every time I hear the last note, I always think, oh yeah, Don't Stop Me. Like, even if you hear it out of context, I always, it's funny because it's not joined together like in Flick of the Wrist or whatever, but I always do think that when I hear it, the very last note of...
That thing where you're just waiting for the tonight.
Yeah, yes.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
here it is. Please enjoy. Leaving Home Ain't Easy.
Oh, Leave.